Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. It's too hot.
Very hot.
It might be too hot. You know, knowing that the hot, sunny weather was coming, I treated myself, Neil. I bought myself a new pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
I see, you can tell what I'm going to say by Neil's voice. So, I generally prefer a bigger frame of sunglasses.
Yeah.
You know, but this, I mixed it up a little bit this time. Trying something new. Hmm. And I got a more kind of slimline, kind of 90s-esque style of glasses.
Mm. Look fucking cat. Look stupid.
Yeah, you weren't a fan. I believe you said you look like you're in the Matrix.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I had absolute notions. Thinking I was trying to be trendy, you know?
Yeah.
What was I doing? I do like the glasses. I just got too big of a head for them, I think. My face is too big for them.
Massive.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is about like a thicker frame of glasses? Like not just thicker frame, but bigger glasses.
Hmm.
It hides the face a bit more. You know?
Yeah.
I want to cover my face. Particularly if I haven't drawn my brows on, you know, that's...
You loved COVID.
I loved it. That sounds really bad. I want to say I loved COVID. I enjoyed that we were all wearing masks.
Mm.
For two reasons. One, keep your fucking germs to yourself.
Yeah.
And I mean that generally speaking, if you've got a cold, I wish we were more like, you know, in Japan, it's more common that if you're not well, you put a mask on.
Still the other day, over here in Ireland, I saw someone with a mask on.
Yeah. I wish we'd adopted that more here, where if you're not well, you automatically make an effort to look out for other people.
Yeah.
I wish we did that. But yeah, during COVID, I loved having my face covered more. I like the kind of the anonymity of it. And the same thing with sunglasses. I like a big pair to hide my face. And like I said, particularly if I haven't drawn my brows on that day, hide my face a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, like I have a variety of sunglasses. All of them are different.
See, you love aviators.
Yes.
Now, I still like them, but I've kind of moved away from them a bit.
All right.
I will come back to them at some point, but for the time being now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah. You've never got off your aviator's kick, have you?
No.
No, never will. You do have another pair of sunglasses. Neil has a lot of sunglasses, by the way. And they're kind of a smaller frame, slightly more rounded.
Mm.
Not something you would usually go for,
no.
But they look stunning on you.
I only have them because I found them.
Yeah. Yeah. What? No, but it was a happy accident. They really, really suit you.
Oh.
You've got a new look. You're very versatile.
In fact, I have another pair of sunglasses what I found. They're Armani. If you saw the photo of me dying in London, do you remember that first crime con we did?
Yeah, you were dying of a hangover, yeah.
Yeah, and I was eating breakfast with sunglasses on. I was wearing them.
I was bright as anything.
Yeah.
I bet it was annoying the shite out of you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, sunglasses, they make a difference, the frames you have.
Mm.
Like, I need to go get my eyes tested soon, right? I think I might need glasses. And if I don't, I'll need them soon. And, you know, you don't like wearing glasses. It's not going to bother me if I do, other than obviously the extra expense. But I'm getting like anxious because it's like I have to spend out on them. I need to pick ones I like.
Yeah.
And I'm very indecisive.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Because you could go in a shop and they've got a big selection, but as soon as you need to pick.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels smaller. It's like, I don't like any of them.
Every time I've gone in with you, when you've gone to get some new glasses, I always look for myself. Do you know that kind of, I don't need them, but I'm like, oh, well, if I was to get some, what would I get? And I can usually pick out a couple of pairs. Guarantee when I need glasses, I'm not going to, none.
I already know if you have to wear glasses, which I think you are going to, you're going to be a pompous prick.
Yes.
You're going to have them on end of your nose.
Yes.
And then before you make a statement,
yes,
you're going to push them up your fucking, the bridge of your nose. Or you're going to take them off and point them at me.
Yes. No. I've already, they're going to sit on the end of my nose. And then when you really piss me off, they're coming off and they're getting pointed in your fucking face.
Yeah.
I can be a bit pretentious at times as it is. Just you fucking wait for it.
You'll do it once too often and I'll snap them.
Mm. I don't doubt you. So I've got a review to read for you before we move on.
Okay.
Now, this review is from Christy. And Christy said, "This podcast changed my life."
Oh.
"Overnight, I lost 1 stone, 12.5 pounds. My bank account has doubled. My IQ is higher. My skin is clearer. I'm able to parallel park first try and am now fluent in 3 languages I've never even studied."
Shanaba.
Our podcast is it's that powerful.
Oh.
"Each episode consists of Megan alternating between her professional, polished, articulate BBC-type true crime persona and her natural Irish form."
BBC?
BBC. Natural Irish form. I like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a werewolf transformation type of thing, the way it sounds. Yeah,
the aggression comes out.
"So with my natural Irish form," she says, "using the latter to berate her co-host for breathing incorrectly into his microphone and to seamlessly steer every conversation towards eyeballs and knobs."
Do I breathe into the mic?
No, I don't think you're that bad. I think it's just that I will needle you for anything.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just fair, isn't it?
Okay.
"Her co-host, Neil, who denies being the son of the Yorkshire Ripper," which is exactly what the Yorkshire Ripper's son would say, "will have you laughing out loud as he regularly interrupts Megan's well-researched true crime cases with absurd questions no one else would say aloud." She also adds that.
Okay.
"So with your absurd question," she says, "confuses her, me, the audience and himself before completely changing the subject. A podcast guaranteed to make you laugh and have you enthralled too. 10 out of 10, entertainment all round." What a fucking review.
Yeah, that's a good one. That is a good one.
Christy, thank you.
Is this the same Christy who...
diagnosed you with ADHD?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's actually a few people now who've come forward and say, "Here, listen.
I've been diagnosed and I know you have it."
The thing is, because we've mentioned how you were informally diagnosed, they're given a second opinion.
Right.
Yeah.
I've had more than a second.
Yeah, actually. I wonder where we're at now.
I think it's about 8.
We've got somewhere on one of the walls, there's like a tally.
Oh, there was actually someone else. I can't remember who it was now. Not only did she diagnose me with ADHD, autism.
Right.
She was like, I think you're a bit autistic. Why is that funny?
Because it's just that, like, people add stuff on, you know?
And you laughed because I came down, because I was away from you at the time, and I went down to you and I went, "I've caught the autistic."
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, I've never been tested. You've never been tested.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But it's just really funny because people do tend to just add on. Now, the ADHD thing, we've said that ourselves, you know, and you are going to like look into it, but it's just so funny.
Yeah.
People just will diagnose you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So send me some meds.
No one's diagnosed me with anything yet. I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure they're trying to, you know, because you're a bit more kind of, you know, when I'm telling the case, you know, like you said, I'm kind of in the persona.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back to myself, my more relaxed form.
Yeah.
My natural Irish form, if you will. Whereas you're yourself 100% all the time.
Yeah.
So they get more of you. They're still trying to compile information on me.
It's like there's an Irish podcast. I don't know what it's called, but I've just seen clips of it on social media.
Yeah.
And there was this Irish guy and he's there talking about, so he's got ADHD. He hasn't been diagnosed, but everyone, like, it's a bit like with me. You have it. You have ADHD.
Yeah, you'd be more surprised if you didn't.
And they did a live show in Australia or something, and a woman in the audience who has ADHD gave him her medication.
Oh, yeah.
And he took it home with him. He took it back to Ireland, and he looked at the label, and it said, "Take 3 tablets 3 times a day. So he did. And he was like, "I couldn't talk." Like, it he only needed half a tablet. The three tablets three times a day was her prescription.
Yeah. So, no good.
So I think with ADHD medication, you have to build up a tolerance. So she'd been taking it for ages, so she could do three times a day.
Mm.
When you start, you take a small amount. He just went in.
Yeah, all in.
And took all of them. And yeah, he went, I couldn't talk. Like, I was done.
Mm.
So it does worry me, especially for the podcast, if I'm just sat there drooling.
Well, again, you're not hopefully not going to just take someone else's dose. You know, if we are doing a live show or something and someone offers you drugs, don't take it.
Yeah. So, part fucking Tress.
Tress, yeah.
Yeah.
Part three of Peter Sutcliffe, also known as the Yorkshire Ripper.
Mm.
P. Suddy.
What?
As he's informally known.
Yeah.
No, you didn't like that one, did you? No. Do you have another? Okay.
Bastard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Cowardly bastard.
Okay, but what's his street name?
Little.
To be fair.
Little cowardly bastard.
It could have just been bastard in the north of England.
Little bastard.
Yeah.
Mm.
So one more thing before we get into the case or jump back into the case.
Mm.
We got a message from a listener.
Okay.
A fellow Sheffielder.
Okay.
Is there any other terminology?
Dida.
Is that not like considered offensive though?
We don't take offense to it.
Okay. Another Dida.
Yeah.
Got in contact.
Mm-hmm.
So her name is Rebecca. And she said her biological father was a lorry driver at the same time as Sutcliffe. Okay. Oh. Might be your long lost sister here, Neil.
Right.
So, lorry driver at the same time that Peter was, and her mother actually called the police to report her father because she was worried that he might be the Ripper.
Fuck off.
Yeah. Now, she said that her father, you know, he wasn't a very nice man.
Right.
The mother very, it wasn't just the fact that he was a lorry driver, she had very definite reason to believe that he was the Ripper.
I think I've seen this on Instagram. He looks like Fred West. She put a picture up in the comments.
Yes, so she did send us a picture of her biological father and definitely a liking to Fred West. Yeah. Yes, very much so.
If you follow us on Instagram, it's the out now post for last week's episode.
Yes.
She's commented and put the picture there.
Now, just to clear the man's name, he was ruled out because of blood type.
Yeah, but he must have been an absolute bastard
for
her to call the cops.
He wasn't great from what I have heard.
Hmm.
From what they're saying down the pub.
Yeah.
But
that man is arms.
You know me. I'm still worried about you and your family. So yeah. I appreciate that the other people were. It also goes to show the effect that was had on the area at the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I tell you another thing, fair fucking play to her mother for reporting him.
Yeah.
You got to think that would have been scary for her to do.
She might have just been trying to get rid of him.
But it's very nerve wracking. If you're not in a good situation with a person to do that, I mean, fair play to her. And you know, this feeds right back into what I'm saying about Northern women. They take no shit.
Yeah.
They get the job done.
Yeah.
Anyway, will we get on with the episode?
Mm.
So part one, you remember we talked all about Petey's background. Part two, we started talking about the attacks and murders.
A fair few of them.
A fair few. Now, part three, we're going to continue with the attacks and murders. Assaults and murders, should I say. They're all fucking attacks.
So there's more?
There is more. Yeah.
So I had a feeling this part would be like the trial.
No, little more. Little more to go.
Fucking hell.
But this episode is closing off the assaults and murders.
Right.
We're going to be done with that section today.
Okay.
On the 17th of February 1979, a 16-year-old student was attacked in Harrogate.
That's a lovely place.
So I've heard. I haven't actually been myself.
It's where Yorkshire Tea was born.
Yeah, it's somewhere you said that if we were to move over to Yorkshire, you'd love Harrogate. Now, obviously, you've got absolute notions. Once you live somewhere like that. But...
yeah, Yorkshire, I'd live in Harrogate or York.
But that's like the dream.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, not so much with what we're talking about right now. So this 16-year-old student, she was hit from behind and suffered 3 severe head injuries. Now, it's highly possible that Peter was her attacker, but they could not determine what had caused her injuries at the time, and she could not provide a description of her attacker. And this was as well as the fact that after the murder of Vera, Peter described his attacks as more random and indiscriminate.
Well, what?
He wasn't kind of targeting certain types of women. The attacks were more kind of, he was branching out.
Just a woman.
He was always kind of doing that, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But he was kind of getting a little bit more sloppy.
Right.
With his attacks.
Big-headed, because he hadn't been caught.
Well, would you like to hear what Peter said?
Go on.
Quote, "I had the urge to kill any woman. It sounds a bit evil now. There I was walking along with a big hammer and a big Phillips screwdriver in my pocket, ready for the inevitable."
Sounds a bit evil now.
I love the way he says this. In my mind, it just sounds like he's downplaying it. It's something straight out of Father Ted. Like, Asher, you know, it sounds a bit evil in hindsight, but there I was with a hammer and a screwdriver, like some mad idiot.
Yeah.
It's very kind of like, huh, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Sounds a bit evil now.
Mm. On the 2nd of March 1979, 22-year-old Anne Rooney was attacked in Leeds. Anne, who was from Ireland, was over in Leeds studying. On that day, she walked past Peter's car, and little did she know, he began to follow her. It was about 8 p.m. when Peter struck Anne 3 times to the head with a hammer. Anne fell to the ground, but was able to let out a scream, which made Peter run like a little bitch. Anne was then found by other students and taken to the hospital. She was able to provide a description of the man, his car, and stated that she believed she had seen him before. At the time, Anne's attack was not linked, as although Peter did use different hammers, this hammer was the wrong hammer, apparently, and the fact that she was not a sex worker.
But they weren't all sex workers.
This is it. It's incredibly frustrating because Anne was able to say what car he was driving, a Sunbeam Rapier. And at this point in the investigation, there was only 3 Sunbeam Rapiers listed as, quote, triple area sightings for red light districts, and Peter's was one of them.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. But unfortunately, the officers who were investigating her attack did not have this information.
Right.
So, you know, like when I say the investigation was handled horribly.
Mm.
Not only was there people who their egos got in the way, but it wasn't well handled in terms of distributing the information or storing it correctly.
Mm. West Yorkshire Police.
At approximately 12:15 at night, on the 5th of April 1979, 19-year-old Josephine Whittaker was murdered in Halifax. Josephine was said to have been a hard worker, and when she left school, she began working at a local branch of the Halifax Building Society, as well as working part-time in a hotel bar. She did this in order to save for the marriage and children that she had hoped for. But before putting all of her money into savings, Josephine decided to treat herself to a new silver watch. Now, after showing her new watch to her mother, they actually got into an argument, as her mother saw this purchase as a waste of money. Josephine stormed out of the house and made her way to her grandparents. She was particularly close with them, and she stayed there until about 5 to midnight before setting off to make the 25-minute walk home.
Bit dramatic, isn't it? Just because your mum said, you spent that on that for, it's a waste of money, stormed out.
Yeah, but I can see how it would escalate. If she's working 2 jobs, she's working hard, and she's doing it with the intention to save for her future. So do you ever get it where you like treat yourself and someone makes kind of a shitty comment like, oh, it's well for some?
Yeah, every time I buy myself something, you say something.
there you go.
Yeah, every time. I bought myself a key ring and she was like, what'd you buy that for? Well, no, put on my keys.
I have no problem with you buying yourself treats. It's just the kind of excessive thing of like, you go, it's only €5, but you've done that 15 times.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
I can see how it could escalate and Joe's come up and like, I just want to get myself a fucking watch. And of all the things to buy yourself, it's also functional. Like,
oh yeah, it's jewellery. You
know? Well, I mean,
function, like.
Yeah. Now, it was on her way home that she came in contact with Peter. As he had done with Tracy, Peter began to walk and talk with Josephine. At about 6:30 in the morning, Josephine's body was found by a woman waiting for the bus. What was now known to be her body had actually been reported to the bus depot by the driver at about 5:30 a.m, but they did not report it to the police.
What?
They didn't realise that the driver had just seen something. So he reported it, you know, go check it out. But they're kind of like, ugh. They didn't know it was a body.
Fucking hell.
Mm. Josephine's skull was fractured from ear to ear, with the weapon thought to have been a hammer. She'd been stabbed 9 times to the front of her torso, 12 times in the back, 6 times to her right leg, and several times to her vagina. Footprints were lifted from the scene, and these were a match to those found at the murders of Emily Jackson and Patricia Atkinson.
Size 7 Dunlop boot.
That's it, Neil. Well done.
Welly.
Look at you.
Yeah.
The print showed wear in the centre, possibly from consistent use of a pedal, like that of a lorry driver. Huh?
Hmm.
Hmm. At about 1 a.m. on the 2nd of September 1979... 20-year-old Barbara Leach was murdered in Bradford. Barbara was about to enter her 3rd year at Bradford University, where she studied social psychology.
I didn't even know Bradford had a uni.
The night of her murder, Barbara had been out with a few of her friends for a meal and drinks. She and her friends stayed back after the pub had closed, and they were given a drink on the house in exchange for helping the landlord tidy up and collect glasses.
Who the fuck does that?
I mean, a few years back, it probably would have been more common, but now, absolutely not. It's get the fuck out, you know?
Yeah. I'll always make an effort, you know, I went to a coffee shop the other week. I don't know where I were. Well, I were on my own.
You didn't throw coffee on the barista again, did you?
No, but I was sat outside and they came, I ordered a latte and they brought me, you know, in the glass mug, which I hate, and they put it on a glass saucer, what I hate. Give me a spoon and no sugar. It's like, what do you want me to do? Just stir the fucking coffee? What's the point of that?
Yeah.
What's the point of doing all this latte art?
Just for you to destroy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To not even sweeten it. Well, I drank it and I didn't just leave it on the table. I went in and passed it to him. I always do that.
Because you're a decent guy.
But I didn't go around all the tables clearing up for him.
Yeah.
Free of charge.
Well, they got a drink out of it.
For a drink.
Yeah.
Get fucked.
It was probably piss anyway. They left the pub at about 12:25. Her friends made their way home and Barbara decided that she wanted to go for a walk before heading home. Barbara's body was found at 5 to 4 in the morning on the 3rd of September. She'd been left sat upright, propped against the wall, with a piece of carpet covering her. Her shirt and bra had been pulled up and her belt and jeans undone, exposing her stomach. There were 7 stab wounds to the front and side of her abdomen and chest, a stab to her shoulder blade, and a wound to the back of her head. A footprint was found at the scene, matching the others. The screwdriver which Peter had used to stab both Josephine and Barbara was later found discarded near a motorway service station 11 miles south of Leeds city centre. Now, Peter had altered the screwdriver into a point. I think we mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, shaving it down.
And the weapon was later described as, quote, one of the most fiendish weapons you have ever seen.
Calm down, it's only like an ice pick.
Yeah, I'm guessing when you see it, knowing what it was used for, you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you know with him using the hammer and stabbing?
Yeah.
I wonder how many of them didn't feel any of the stabbing. Like, I wonder how many of them were already dead.
Yeah.
they'd been hit in the head that many times they were dead.
Or blacked out, yeah.
And then he's just stabbing him for the sake of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely with him, a huge amount of this was enjoyment.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's doing it for that rush of adrenaline. Mm. But, you know, it's kind of, it's crossing over into the I want to mutilate.
Yeah.
For Barbara's funeral, her mother bought herself a new outfit, and it was a particularly expensive one at that. So Barbara's father, he sort of raised an eyebrow at this. Maybe he was thinking, is this the time to be spending out?
Tone it down a bit.
What do you mean, tone it down?
Well, like, was it revealing?
No, nothing like that. Oh. It was just a more expensive outfit.
Okay.
And like I said, he's a bit like, you know, why are you spending out on that?
Hmm.
Well, Barbara's mother, she had a pretty fucking perfect response to this. She told him it's not just for her funeral, it's for her graduation, her wedding, the birth of her babies. These were the moments that have been taken from their future with Barbara.
Yeah.
Well, she put him in.
Justifiable.
She put him in his place, didn't she? I bet he was like, fair enough.
His eyebrow went back down.
Yes.
That's the sort of thing you would say if I raised an eyebrow. You'd be like, fucking get that down.
100%. Fucking relax that.
Yeah.
At 5 to 9 on the evening of the 11th of October, 1979, 21-year-old Yvonne Maslevyet was attacked in Bradford. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing that name. Yvonne was struck in the back of the head with a ball-peen hammer as she walked over the footbridge of a rail station. Her attacker fled as someone else approached. Now, there was a witness to this attack. It was a 16-year-old boy, and he was convinced that the attacker was the Yorkshire Ripper. He said that after the man had run away, he got into a, quote, flatbed-style lorry and drove off. Quote, Peter Sutcliffe is the man that attacked Yvonne, 100%.
So he was doing it from a lorry?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not entirely convinced on if Yvonne's attack is linked. The area of Bradford, yes. The weapon, yes. But Peter generally used his car when committing these assaults or murders. And I don't know, there's something about the location of a railway footbridge. It seems slightly off to me.
Hmm.
Of course, it is possible that Peter was Yvonne's attacker, but it's also very possible that some other twisted fuck copycatted him and assumed the Ripper would just get the blame for it.
Yeah. You know what, lorries, actually? I'm surprised there hasn't been like a serial killer. Because it'd be so easy for him, especially like back in the day when there weren't as much CCTV.
Mm.
If you've got an empty fucking back, you know, you're in your lorry all night, sleeping and what have you, of doing the murders in the lorry.
Yeah.
And you could even have a barrel of acid or something.
Yeah.
Why are you saying that?
I think, again, we mentioned this only an episode or so ago, where you're like giving tips. You know what I mean?
No, but doesn't every true crime listener?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. But what if the acid tipped over?
Well, you seal it.
No, but it's in a truck, like, you know what I mean? If anything was to happen.
Yeah, but with a barrel, yeah, you put the lid on and it has like a bracket on it.
Yeah.
And you'll snap it shut.
But you're saying there's no chance it could ever burst open?
No.
Okay.
A metal barrel? How's it going to burst?
Oh, I wasn't thinking metal. I was thinking the plastic with the metal clip on it.
Well, you can't put acid in a plastic barrel. It'd melt through, Megan. You have to get a metal one.
That's a fair point, Neil. But Neil, what do you think? Do you think it was most likely Peter? Or do you think... do you see my point or not?
No, I do see your point.
Mm. I know there's not a huge amount of information to go on there. But the eyewitness saying 100% it was Peter.
Mm.
I mean, it was a 16-year-old boy. You're not necessarily the most reliable of witnesses. And even if he was convinced, everyone's kind of up in arms about the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's like a conversation we had the other day. So, you know, I'd come to you and I said, you know, there's something I can't get out of my head. Right? We know Peter was a bullshitter. He was a liar. Why would he own up to some murders and then others he was like, no, I didn't.
Mm.
And I said to you, because you went, you know, he might be wanting to just mess with the cops, mess with the investigation. But But I'd got it. I couldn't get this feeling out of my head. But you telling me there was no one in Yorkshire at that time who wanted to get the thrill of the kill.
Yeah.
So they were like, well, before they catch this fucker, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So it's just going to get pinned on him. As long as I use a hammer.
Yeah.
And I stab him and I don't leave my semen there.
This is kind of, like, I want to be careful saying that. I don't want to be disrespectful to Yvonne if she believes that he was her attacker. You know, and I don't fucking know if he was or not. I'm just saying based off of what I've heard. And again, it's not to downplay what this boy was saying, you know, but he witnessed it. But the wording kind of like 100% was him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like overly trying to convince you. Mm. It just sounds to me like it was another guy, like I said, assuming Peter's going to get the blame. And also, we still have to remember, you know, women get attacked by men all the time. It's not abnormal, yeah. Unfortunately. And especially if, not in Yvonne's case, but if it was any of the women who had been with Peter for sex work, that's why they were in his presence. Again, higher rates of these women getting attacked.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of bastards out there, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
On the 20th of August, 1980, 47-year-old Marguerite Walls was murdered in Leeds at 10:45 p.m. When Marguerite was a teenager, her family moved to Derry. She served in the Women's Royal Army Corps before being discharged in 1959. In 1960, Marguerite transferred to London. From there, she lived in Basingstoke and Leicester before transferring to Leeds in 1978, following the end of her relationship. The night of her murder, Marguerite had been working late, not leaving the office until sometime between 9:30 and 10:30 p.m.
Fuck that.
In the times of the Ripper.
What?
In the times of the Ripper. Yeah. Or you just mean working late?
Well, working late, but yeah, at that time.
Yeah.
Fuck the job.
Marguerite's body was found in a garden the following morning, just after 9 a.m. She was laid face down, her clothing stripped and covered by a blue mac coat and grass cuttings. There was blood by the gateway, indicating that this is where she had first been attacked. There was two stab wounds to her head. Three of her ribs were fractured on her left side, likely from her attacker having knelt down on her. A ligature mark was visible around her neck. She was covered in defensive wounds, and there was three fingernail scratches to her vagina.
So yeah. That one's new with a ligature.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember, again, when you were watching the dramatization of the case?
Mm.
And I said to you, don't get too set.
Yeah,
yeah. You were kind of going, you were kind of asking me, is this like the actual case?
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm currently in the middle of watching, it's a drama series called The Long Shadow. But I've stopped watching it because it got up to Vera's murder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that was at the end of the part we'd recorded.
Well, after this episode, you're free to to watch it. But yeah, I think, you know, with you hearing me talk about the case and at the same time you're watching the dramatization, I mean, it's just fucking... all Peter Sutcliffe all the time at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kept talking to me and asking me stuff and I was kind of discussing with you, but obviously there were so many things. I'm kind of like, oh, we have to wait till we talk about it on the podcast.
Mm.
But a lot of things you were asking, I was like, oh, okay, well, I can't wait to discuss it further because you were really questioning some things.
Yeah.
And, you're an inquisitive bastard.
I am.
Now, like I just mentioned there, the scratches to her private parts. It was described as the external walls of her vagina. Not quite sure what that means. I would take that to mean her vulva.
Right.
So when asked why he had changed his method, Peter said, quote, because the press and the media had attached a stigma to me. I had been known for some time as the Yorkshire Ripper, which, to my mind, didn't ring true at all. It was just my way of killing them, but actually, I found that the method of strangulation was even more horrible and took longer.
Right.
Right, yes. But, again, this is very important. this is something, you know, we've talked about multiple times. When people go, it's not their usual MO, it can't be them.
Yeah, yeah.
Peter is saying it himself. Like, as ridiculous as it sounds for him to be like, oh, they attached a stigma to me. He's right. Like, for the killer themselves to go, they put the stigma to me, so I'm mixing it up, I'm changing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And this is so fucking important. You know, do not go, oh, well, they stab with a screwdriver, therefore they can never use a knife.
Yeah.
Or what have you. Now, before we continue with the rest of the attacks, there is something we need to discuss. And that is Wearside Jack. Between March of 1978 and June of 1979, the police received two letters and one audio tape. And this was from a man claiming to be the Yorkshire Ripper.
Oaks.
Yes, it was.
Right.
The first letter, which was received on the 9th of March, read, quote, "Dear Sir, I am sorry I cannot give you my name for obvious reasons. I am the Ripper. I've been dubbed a maniac by the press, but not by you. You call me clever, and I am. You and your mates haven't a clue that photo in the paper gave me fits. And that bit about killing myself, no chance. I've got things to do. My purpose to rid the streets of them sluts. My one regret is that young lassie, MacDonald, did not know 'cause changed routine that night. Up to 8 now, you say 7, but remember Preston 75. Get about, you know. You were right, I travel a bit. You probably look for me in Sunderland. Don't bother, I am not daft. Just posted a letter there on one of my trips. Not a bad place compared with Chapeltown and Manningham and other places. Warn whores to keep off the street, 'cause I feel it coming on again. Yours respectfully, Jack the Ripper."
Fuck him in the nick.
Might write again later. I'm not sure last one really deserved it. Whores getting younger each time. Old slut next time, I hope. Huddersfield never again. Too small, close call last one. So, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And if you remember at the end of our last episode, I mentioned a woman named Joan Harrison. Joan Harrison is the reference in the letter to Preston 75.
Okay.
Or should I say the reference to Preston 75?
Is Joan Harrison.
Is Joan Harrison. Joan was a 26-year-old mother of two, and she was murdered 3 weeks after Wilma McCann. She was found laying face down, her trousers pulled down, and one leg out of her underpants. She was wearing two padded bras which had been pulled up to expose her breasts.
Why she wearing two bras?
I suppose just hoist them up a bit. There's a lot of girls when I was younger, they'd wear two bras to really kind of, you know, get them up and out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Can't you just like...
You don't know the tricks, Neil.
Can't you just like over-tighten one?
No. No, it wouldn't. I mean, you can tighten it a little bit, but then it's digging into you.
Right.
Yeah. You need padding and lift.
Well, I didn't know you wore two in them. I thought you just like ram socks in there and that.
No, no, it was quite common.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know about the 70s. I wasn't kicking about then.
Yeah.
But at least in the 2000s, yes, a lot of girls were doing that.
Right.
Mm. The more you know.
That must be a pain if like, you know, if you were having like a one night stand or something. And it's like, go on, get me tits out.
But again...
And then they have to, like, some blokes struggle with one bra.
Yeah.
You imagine if they're wearing one bra and it's a front clasp, one bra and it's a rear.
Again, northern women, if they don't want their bra taken off,
they're like
gonna
a
fucking,
Rubik's Cube in there.
They're going to let you know, do not fucking take that off. They're going to slap your hand away real fucking quick. Don't worry about that. Now, Joan had wounds to her head, thought to have been caused by a heeled shoe, and other injuries to her body, thought to have been caused by kicking and stamping. There was a bite mark on her left breast, but no stab wounds. Her boots had been placed over her legs, and semen was found located both vaginally and anally from around the time of her death.
That, right. I know this doesn't sound important, but I need to fucking know why he used to do that with the shoes.
Yeah.
What was that?
That is very convincing that her murder could be connected with the shoe thing. It's a very specific detail.
Yeah.
And her murder was considered as a possible Ripper murder but later dismissed.
On what grounds?
I would assume just the distance. They thought it was a little bit too far out.
Right.
But when this murder was referenced in the letters, police then believed it to be connected.
Okay.
Now, in 2008, a man named Christopher Smith from Leeds was arrested for drink driving. A DNA sample was taken, which was a match to the DNA found in Joan's murder.
Oh.
Mm. At his home, a note was found which read, quote, "To whoever it concerns, I would like to put the record straight. I can't go on with the guilt. I have lived with it for over 20 years. I am truly sorry for all the pain I have caused to anyone. Please believe me when I say I am sorry. I love my grandkids and my daughter. I cannot go back to prison anymore. Please God help my family who I worship. I've been out of trouble for over 20 years, so please God help me. I am so sorry. God forgive me. I love you all."
Don't bring God into this.
Well, Christopher died just 6 days following his arrest due to a terminal illness, but police said that, had he not died, they had enough evidence to charge him with the murder.
Right.
That's fucking... In 2008.
Yeah.
You know, all those years later, and then you finally got him.
Mm.
And then he goes and dies.
So he really was trying to make it look like the Ripper.
I mean, that was in 75. So that was at the start of the Yorkshire Ripper.
Oh,
it might have just been a weird coincidence.
So you're only copycatting one murder. Wilma.
And he did, yeah, he didn't do it after, he didn't do the shoe thing with Wilma. So it's just a weird thing that happened.
Right. And there's no connection between Peter Sutcliffe and
I do not believe so.
Okay.
He was from Leeds though, so not far from Petey.
Mm.
Mm. Another letter was sent to the Daily Mail on the 13th of March. It was essentially the same letter sent to the police, but as if he was informing the press in case the police chose not to go public with it. He did differ towards the end of the letter, writing, quote, "Might write again after another week gone. Liverpool or even Manchester again. Too hot here in Yorkshire. Bye. I have given advance warning, so it's yours and their fault."
Fucking weirdo.
Scumbag.
Yeah.
Absolute fucking scumbag. The second letter to the police was received on the 23rd of March, 1979. It read, quote, "Dear officer, sorry I haven't written. About a year to be exact, but I haven't been up north for quite a while. I wasn't kidding last time I wrote, saying that the whore would be older this time and maybe I'd strike in Manchester for a change. You should have took heed. That bit about her being in hospital. Funny, the lady mentioned something about being in hospital before I stopped her whoring ways. The lady won't worry about hospitals now, will she? I bet you'd be wondering how come I haven't been to work for ages. Well, I would have been if it hadn't been for your cursed coppers. I had the lady just where I wanted her and was about to strike when one of your cursing police cars stopped right outside the lane."
What, was he going to target a Muslim woman?
What?
Like, because you said something about took heed.
Took heed.
Like
heed,
a head.
Took heed. Like take notice. Take notice of something.
Okay.
You should have, yeah.
I thought he was like, you know, being pedantic and giving a Muslim woman a nickname, Eid.
No.
Right, okay.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He must have been a dumb copper because he didn't say anything. He didn't know how close he was to catching me. Tell you the truth, I thought I was collared. The lady said don't worry about the coppers. Little did she know, that bloody copper saved her neck. That was last month, so I don't know when I will be back on the job, but I know it won't be Chapeltown. Too bloody hot there, maybe Bradford's Manningham. Might write again if up north. P.S. Did you get the letter I sent to the Daily Mirror in Manchester?
He's such a needy little shitbag.
Just a fucking prick.
Yeah. It's like a smell of a fart what won't go away. You know, as much as you waft it, not going.
Well, he's not done yet, because on the 18th of June 1979, police receive a tape. Now, the voice was a northeast accent and said, quote, "I'm Jack. I see you are still having no luck catching me. I have the greatest respect for you, George, but Lord, you are no nearer catching me now than 4 years ago when I started. I reckon your boys are letting you down, George. They can't be much good, can they? The only time they came near catching me was a few months back in Chapeltown when I was disturbed. Even then, it was a uniformed copper, not even a detective. I warned you in March that I'd strike again. Sorry it wasn't Bradford. I did promise you that, but I couldn't get there. I'm not quite sure when I'll strike again, but it will definitely be sometime this year. Maybe September, October, or even sooner if I get the chance. I'm not sure where. Maybe Manchester. I like it there. There's plenty of them knocking about. They never learn, do they, George? I bet you've warned them, but they never listen. At the rate I'm going, I should be in the book of records. I think it's 11 up to now, isn't it? Well, I'll keep on going for quite a while yet. I can't see myself being nicked just yet. Even if you do get near, I'll probably top myself first. Well, it's been nice chatting to you, George. Yours, Jack the Ripper."
Right. So...
Hang on one second. little PS for you as well. "No good looking for fingerprints. You should know by now. It's as clean as a whistle. See you soon. Bye. Hope you like the catchy tune at the end. Ha ha." Now, the tune he's referring to is 22 seconds of "Thank You for Being a Friend" by Andrew Gold, which played at the end of the tape. I mean, it is a catchy tune, but that's neither here nor there, Jack. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Why Jack? It's not Jack the Ripper.
No.
So why is he calling himself Jack the Ripper?
Because he had a bit of a thing for Jack the Ripper, clearly.
But he didn't know the difference, like, between the cases.
Yeah.
Yorkshire Ripper. It's not Jack the Ripper fucking years later as thought, right, I'm going to take Yorkshire now.
Yeah. It's like he wanted to make it seem as if it was, like, influenced by Jack the Ripper or something.
Right. Mm. Okay.
So, cutting to the chase, like we already said, these letters and tape were a hoax, and it caused a massive distraction and cost to the investigation.
Mm.
Although being repeatedly told that these letters and tapes were not from the killer, which also included the opinion of famed FBI profiler Robert Ressler, the police refused to believe that the letters were a hoax, and they became convinced that the killer was from Sunderland.
Yeah. Fucking, do you know what they should do with this guy?
String him up.
Fine him, give him a kick in, and nick him. Give him a good shoeing.
That's more South Yorkshire police, though, no?
Give him a good shoeing.
That's what you've told me.
Yeah, that, right.
I'm not casting aspersions, yeah. I'm just furthering the rumour.
I'm not getting done for slander, but it was well known when I was growing up, back in day,
yeah.
If they knew they were in a blind spot, third gear one.
More like this type of time period rather than you growing up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
You have your sources.
Mm.
Can't divulge them.
Mm.
On the 24th of September 1980, 34-year-old Upadhyay Bandara was attacked in Leeds at 10:30 PM. Upadhyay was from Singapore and was in Leeds to attend a course, having won a scholarship from the World Health Organization.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, not good connotations with Leeds.
Yeah.
As Upadhyay walked home that evening, she noticed a man who was staring at her through the window of a KFC. As she continued to walk on, she walked down an alley, and this is where she was struck twice to the back of the head. After the blow to the head, a rope was put around her neck, and she lost consciousness. During the attack, Peter accidentally knocked over a bin, which caused a woman to come out of her house and check what the noise was. With his attack being disturbed, Peter fled the scene, and the woman helped Upadhyay to get help. The marks to her neck displayed a plaited pattern. One of the injuries to the back of her head looked as though it had been made from someone having kicked her, and her hands showed damage caused from her attempting to loosen the rope from around her neck. Police believe that Marguerite and Upadhyay's attack were connected, but believe that they were perpetrated by different men. When Upadhyay returned to Singapore, she chose not to inform her family of the attack until after Peter had been arrested.
But when she saw Peter had been arrested, was she like, that's him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of understand that. You know, she was going over to the UK, this great opportunity.
Mm.
And then this happens to her. I can understand maybe she didn't want to, especially if they didn't find the attacker.
Yeah.
Why she's maybe like, do you know what? I don't want to like freak my family out, make it more of a thing.
See, I wonder if his next murder would be like more brutal because his previous one was disturbed. Do you get what I mean? It's like this pemped, like a cat, pemped up fucking, well, they have anxiety. I'm not, it's like pemped up anger.
Yeah, pent up aggression kind of thing. Yeah. Well, there is definitely a detail in the final murder which you will not like.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what, eyeballs. Yeah.
We've still got a couple more attacks, though, before we get to it.
Mm.
So you just have a minute to gather yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the 25th of October, 1980, 20-year-old Mo Lee was attacked in Leeds at about 10 to 11 at night. On the night that Mo was attacked, she'd been walking towards the bus stop after leaving the pub. She became aware that someone was watching her, and then she heard footsteps followed by a voice. The man called out to her, saying something along the lines of, "Do I know you?" He was wearing a bomber jacket, and she was certain that he was trying to conceal something. Mo made the decision to run, but Peter caught up to her, hitting her over the head, knocking her to the ground. He was disturbed by two people who had turned onto the street, and Mo was taken to the hospital. The blow to the head was caused by a hammer, her skull and cheekbone fractured, her jaw shattered. There was two stab wounds to the base of her skull, which had just barely missed her spinal cord. Lorna Smith was one of the people who had interrupted Peter's attack. She later recalled what the officer had said to her. Quote, "If we decided to take this instance seriously, we may want to question you again."
If we decide to?
Exactly. Lorna said, quote, and that phrase, "If we decided to take this seriously," just echoed in my head and took my breath away. I just thought, what state do you have to be in for them to take it seriously? I just found it an extraordinary statement. And she's fucking right.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. We can all like slip up on our word.
You just did.
I just did. We can all slip up on our words. But
in you fell this, flat on your face with that one.
I really did. I can't, I don't know words. Who do you think I am? In this kind of a case, you got to try harder.
Yeah.
You got to fucking, I mean, the Yorkshire Ripper's about, lads.
No, but back then they really didn't give a shit about it. You know,
no.
Especially if they're fixated on he only attacks sex workers.
Yeah.
So even if we have a victim and they say they're not a sex worker, they are. Because they're a victim of him.
Yes, exactly.
It's fucking disgusting. That's disgusting in itself. But then the idea of, well, it's not important because it's a sex worker.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, exactly. There's no winning with them.
Yeah.
They are so convinced. They want to believe what they want to believe.
Mm. But then it's one of them things where, you know, say if women, not just sex workers, women, if they started being like, right, I'm tooling up, I'm carrying a fucking knife.
Yeah.
If they used that on someone.
Oh, you're to blame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's...
There's no winning.
Yeah.
Now, Mo's attack was not immediately linked to the Yorkshire Ripper, but this was most likely because they're already drowning in the depths of the investigation at this point. They did not want more cases, you know?
It's like I've said before, ladies, that deep heat spray works wonders.
On your back.
Yeah, on your back.
On the 5th of November 1980, 16-year-old mother of one, Teresa Sykes, was attacked in Huddersfield at about 8 p.m. On the night of her attack, Teresa had gone to the shop to buy a pack of cigarettes. On her way, she noticed a man in the telephone box, not using the phone, just standing in there. As she made her way home, underneath the glow of the streetlights, she noticed a shadow. Teresa said of this moment, quote, "I couldn't run. I couldn't do half the things you think you can do, and I couldn't do it." Teresa was struck 3 times to the head with a hammer before managing to let out a scream which alerted her neighbours and left Peter with no option but to run.
Mm.
Teresa's boyfriend Jim also came outside after hearing her scream. He caught sight of her attacker and ran after him shouting, quote, "I'll fucking kill you," but unfortunately, he lost him during the chase after Peter hid in a hedge. Although Teresa's skull had been fractured, causing a hole the size of a 50p coin, she didn't realise the damage until she actually saw the blood.
A 50p coin? Back then as well?
Oh yeah.
They were bigger.
Huge.
Yeah.
Your money's very big, I feel.
What?
It's very, you know, like your notes?
Yeah.
If you have like a standard wallet, it doesn't fit in there. You got to like fold it up. I remember going over and I remember getting money. This was years ago.
Mm.
Actually, I don't know if it's smaller now with your like plastic notes you have.
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't have them plastic notes when I lived there.
Yeah, but like years ago, it was like 10 years ago. And I remember like it just would not fit in my wallet. I had to fold it.
No, the fivers and the tenners were all right. The 20s were a bit bigger.
It might have been, because if I was getting money exchange, it was at least getting 20 or 50. Do you know what I mean?
You'd be getting 20s.
I know, I definitely had 50s though, because you're like, oh, they don't accept 50s. I was like, what?
A lot of places, yeah, you'd go in and you'd go to give a 50 and they'd be like, oh no, we don't take them.
That's wild.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because they were the most counterfeitable ones.
Well, like in Ireland, not just in Ireland, in countries that use euros, I mean, we have a 500 euro note.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah. The fact that 50 is your biggest is crazy.
Over in UK, it's weird. Like, you could have a 50 euro note and they won't take it. Well, they probably would now with inflation and everything. I don't know. But Scottish money, you could go in a shop and hand over Scottish money and they'd be like, oh, we don't take that. It's
yeah.
Like, it's legal tender.
These
you can't
bastards.
Deny it.
Yeah.
You know? Madness. But the 50p's...
You said it too quick. I didn't get in there.
The 50p coins back then...
Oh, you could kill someone with
them. Were bigger.
They're huge.
Yeah.
You threw that at someone's head. Now, Teresa's attack was not immediately linked. Again, the police were drowning at this point and they decided to only attribute murders to the Yorkshire Ripper, not attacks. Which is just, wow. I completely understand they were swamped, they were not prepared for an investigation on this scale, as well as the fact that they had completely fucked up this investigation. But what really gets me, though, is with the Yorkshire Ripper, the attacks and murders were no different in that the only difference is that he was disturbed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But that's ridiculous because there could have been a piece of evidence from one of the attacks.
Yes.
What could have solved it?
Yes.
It could have been the final piece to the puzzle.
Exactly. He didn't choose between I'm going to attack this day versus murder. He had planned to kill anyone and everyone who he had attacked.
Yeah.
And to essentially downplay what these women had gone through is beyond awful.
Yeah, yeah.
Teresa later said, quote, "I used to go to bed of a night, put the wardrobe behind the door, put the dressing table behind the door, and I'd sleep with a knife under my pillow, which my mum would go bar me about. But that was the only thing that made me feel that bit safer." So you're telling me this is how this woman's having to fucking live now.
Yeah.
And it's not the same.
Yeah.
Not the same because she did not lose her life.
Do you know what, like, you're saying, mum went bar me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what? This actually scared the shit out of me. It's funny now because it never happened, but it scared the shit out of me at the time. So I'd bought this katana set. Decorative.
Yeah.
It got like a sharp edge on it, like for stabbing through something, but you couldn't slice.
Yeah.
Really. And basically, one of them, you know where there's a small one, one a bit bigger, and then one a bit bigger, and they were on a stand, all three of them.
Yeah.
And my ex said, I don't think it's a good idea you're having that. And I went, why? And she went, well, I've been known to sleepwalk. What if I just get one of them and stab you to death in your sleep?
Is that a threat?
And I was like, don't. Like, what? Did you just say that?
That is oddly specific of you to say.
Yeah. You're getting your fucking story straight already.
That honestly does sound like I'm laying the groundwork. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Did she ever say this to you before and go like, oh, just if you find the fridge door open, it's because I sleepwalk or anything like that?
She told me, but she'd sleepwalked.
Yeah, but did she give you warnings about things she does before?
No.
Yeah, so the knife thing, that's very, very specific.
Yeah.
That's some fucking groundwork there, I think.
Yeah.
Now, Neil, the final murder committed by the Yorkshire Ripper was that of 20-year-old Jacqueline Hill at approximately 9:25 p.m. on the 17th of November, 1980, in Leeds.
Right.
Jacqueline was in the third year of her English degree at Leeds University and had hopes of entering a career in the probation service. She taught Sunday school on her time off and was in the process of planning her wedding to her long-term partner. During her first year at the university, Jacqueline lived in the hall of residence. In her second year, she moved into a house with four other students. By her third year, her mother, worried for her safety, you know, given the Yorkshire Ripper attacks, she thought it would be safer for her to move back into the hall of residence, and that's what Jacqueline did. At about 10 p.m. on the night of her murder, a student found Jacqueline's handbag on the footpath. He went to hand the bag in, but by this time the office was closed and so he took it home. He later called the police after noticing spots of blood on the bag. At about 10 a.m. the following morning, Jacqueline's body was found. Jacqueline was laid face down, her jeans pulled down to her ankles, her set of keys still clipped to the waistband. Her heart-shaped locket was tangled in her blood-matted hair, and her bra pulled up, exposing her breasts. 5 wounds to her head, one to her left breast, and her right eye had been punctured.
What's it add?
Peter would later explain why he had stabbed Jacqueline to the eye. Now, just brace yourself for a sec, okay?
I know what it's going to be. Can I have a guess?
Sure.
She was staring at him.
Mm-hmm.
Once she was dead.
Yeah. But it's just what he says overall, I think you're going to find it hard to hear. So just bear with me for a sec.
Better not say anything about it squelching.
So Peter said, quote, I couldn't stand her looking at me. I was surprised how easy it was until it reached the back of her skull. There was no blood, only pus.
Right.
You okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, although the blows to the head were severe enough to cause bruising and lacerations to her brain, a contributing factor was the stabbing, which had collapsed her lung, causing bleeding in the chest cavity. It was the pathologist's opinion that, had Jacqueline been found immediately following the attack, she may have survived.
Fuck.
Jacqueline's murder was officially linked to the Yorkshire Ripper. Not only was Jacqueline's murder the final murder for the Yorkshire Ripper, but it was at this point that people were being pushed past their breaking point. How was this still happening? It had been years of fear and constantly looking over your shoulder. Why were the women of Northern England being persecuted for the actions of one man?
I'd say, what was this, like 6 years, was it?
This is, I mean, obviously longer, we know, but this is 5 years of the Yorkshire Ripper.
Right.
Women took to the streets with their Reclaim the Night protests. They were infuriated that they were the ones being told to stay off the streets rather than the men who were committing these types of crimes. Even the Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, she decided it was time to get involved. She couldn't understand how there had been so little progress, and she actually wanted to go to Leeds herself to take over the investigation.
Yeah, like, I think that's a really good point, you know, keeping women off the streets. No, have a curfew. Have a fucking curfew. Everyone.
For, oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's either curfew for men or just everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's only going to be the same. You know, curfew for men, men are going to kick off. They're going to be like, well, it's not all of us. It's just one.
Yeah.
So just do it for everyone.
I mean, I'm guessing they want men to move freely so they can still kind of like, oh, hunt the Ripper. Do you know what I mean? Like, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you put a curfew on or whatever it may be, the Ripper is still going to go out, right? You know, you don't need to worry about that. Now, like I just mentioned, Margaret Thatcher, she was fucking sick of it. She wanted to get hands on the investigation. Yous are fucking incompetent.
Mm.
Now, Margaret Thatcher was a fucking cunt.
Yep.
But on this particular issue, this is one thing I can give her, you know? She was sick of it. What is going on up there? Why is there no, like, because it's not just that it's still going and you haven't caught him. It doesn't seem to be any progression in this case.
Yeah.
You know? Now, after this, she didn't end up going, she was talked out of it. They thought it wasn't a good idea for the Prime Minister to get directly involved and also link the government to this horrific investigation.
Mm.
So after this, the man in command of the Ripper inquiry team was excused from his duty and a new squad was brought in. With this, it wouldn't be long before the Yorkshire Ripper was caught and there would finally be an end to his reign of terror. And that is where we're going to leave it for part three.
Okay.
How are you feeling, Neil? We're through the assaults and the murders.
Yeah.
Next week, I'm sure you can tell, it's going to be the investigation, the trial.
Yeah, I was hoping to hear, like, how they got him.
No, no, you got to wait for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All I did was traumatize you with mentioning an injury to an eye this week.
I'd got it in my head, but this week it was, like, everything but the trial.
No, no.
No, okay. No.
Yeah. Has to wait. How are you feeling now? That, like I said, that's the heaviest part, you know, in terms of like the murders, you know, the kind of the brutality out of the way.
Yeah. The hoax calls.
Yeah.
Did they get him?
Yes. And we will talk about that
okay.
in the final episode.
Okay. I'm going to say like,
I won't leave you hanging, Neil.
Yeah. No, I just thought it was funny. I thought, oh, so they knew it were a hoax, but they didn't know who it was, is how I thought you'd left it.
Well, they didn't find out for a while.
Right. Okay. Mm. Yeah. I'm glad that that's all out of the way. I just can't believe how many victims there was. You know, and like I said in the last episode, it was said, oh yeah, Yorkshire Ripper used to hit him around Edway and Hammer.
Yeah.
And which would kill him and then he'd fuck off.
And this is the other thing. So I'm saying done with it, we're through it all. With what I'm covering, there are still other attacks and, you know, cases that could possibly be linked. You know,
yeah.
There is so much to this case.
And another bit what's surprising me is, especially like, well, no, actually, because it's more towards the end, you know, and you said he was getting sloppy. I don't think he was getting sloppy. I think, you know, the reason why most of the murders, what he tried to do, were getting interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Was because he was doing too much.
Yeah.
He was stabbing. He was masturbating. He was hitting him with a hammer. He was wrapping rope around the fucking neck.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that you're right. I shouldn't use that word. It's not exactly the right word. You know, Peter kind of said he started to alter it because of the stigma.
Yeah.
So although I do believe he was getting more and more frantic of, like, you know, just the sheer volume of people he was attacking. Yeah, he did make a clear, concise decision to alter his methods.
Yeah, and he was doing too much. He should have done less. Do less.
Yeah, do less, Peter. Come on.
So, Oddity.
Otzi, the Iceman.
Okay.
On the 19th of September, 1991, two hikers were making their way through the Alps.
Are you trying to say Alps?
I'm trying to say Alps.
Fucking ape at one point.
It's been a long, hot day. Two hikers were making their way through the Otzel Alps on the Austrian-Italian border when they made a disturbing discovery. The couple, Erika and Helmut, found a body. Their initial thought was, you know, Jesus, this must have been a mountaineer who had gotten themselves into some trouble and subsequently froze to death.
Helmut?
Yeah. Or Helmut. That's probably more.
Helmut?
Rajaman. Yeah. You never heard the name before?
Helmut?
Yes.
No.
Helmut.
Like, you'd say something like, look at Helmut on him, meaning
yeah. a helmet.
Head on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but never that was heard his it name. As a native. Have a bit of respect. So, like I said, found a body. They were...
Yeah.
They reported their finding, and the following day, officials attempted to retrieve the body. Now, the body was frozen in ice below the torso, which made the job slightly more difficult, and with bad weather...
Melt it.
Melt it?
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to extract it. They, you know what I mean? They're not really going to want to add heat to it, I'd imagine. And there was also particularly bad weather at the time, so it was decided to attempt recovery at a later date.
Or you could, like, chisel a cube, like a big ice cube.
Yeah, again, it was bad weather, so they didn't want to be out there for a prolonged yeah. period of time.
Yeah.
You just care about the iceman getting freed. On the 22nd of September, the body was successfully recovered. So just a few days, Neil. No need to panic.
Was he dead?
Yes.
Why are you saying it like that?
He's frozen in ice.
Yeah. You can survive from it, can't you? Like they say, freeze a body. Like, so, I don't know why you're looking like that. They say, don't you, if you want to go in future, if you want to go in the future.
Yeah.
You freeze the body.
Yeah.
And then thaw it out at yes. a later date.
Yeah.
So that's why I was asking, was he dead?
Yes,
he could have survived.
No, he was dead. He's very much dead. He was not alive, Neil.
Okay.
So, like I said, his body was successfully recovered along with a few other finds at the site. Between tissue samples taken and typology of the axe which was found with the body, it was concluded that the body was not in fact that of a climber who had gotten into a bit of bother, but actually a murdered man whose body had been there for about 5,300 years.
I didn't know he was murdered. Could have just been injuries like from battle.
Well, I mean, the injuries to his body indicated that he had been murdered.
Right.
And I have to say, his body was in a fabulous state, all things considered. For that age.
Well, he's not that old, is he? Because he died at like 30 year old.
No, but his remains were over 5,000 years old.
Well, yeah, but he was frozen.
Yeah. But that's still a hell of a long time for a body to be there. And it was still somewhat exposed.
Yeah, but it's the same as if you go to Butcher's and you buy some burgers. Yeah?
Yes.
Them burgers will only last a day, 2 days max.
Yeah.
Freeze them? Last ages.
But it still degrades.
Mm.
Do you know what the thing is here? It's just you're trying to poke a hole in it.
I'm not.
Yeah. You can't just say, Otzi, you look fabulous. You look great. You look tremendous.
No, but I don't like how you're poking holes, you know, because I asked, was he dead? It's a fact, isn't it? But they freeze bodies. Like, you see it all the time.
Yeah, like Walt Disney is said to have frozen his body.
What?
Walt Disney.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, but we're not talking about Walt Disney. We're talking about Otzi the Iceman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you'd got in your head. You'd got like Fry from fucking Futurama sort of thing, or Sly Stallone in Demolition Man. But that is the sort of thing I've got in my head with Demolition Man.
Yeah.
But they do that, don't they? Like you just said, Walt Disney did it.
I mean, I don't know anything about it, but yeah, like I have heard that people do that in hopes of being kind of reanimated later on.
Yeah, so I don't appreciate you giving me looks like that. Like the listeners aren't going to.
But I've already said they found a body. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but once he's thawed out, he might have woke up.
No. Like I said, he was in great state. For a mummy, you know, that kind of way, but not for a human being, not for a living person.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I walked in the door and looked like that, you'd be like, Christ, not even call a doctor, call a coroner. Like, yeah, it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Now, like I said, he was named Otzi. This was, you know, a nod to where he was found. And through genetic testing, he was discovered to have been in his mid-40s, balding, with darker eyes, hair and skin.
Why did they have to say balding?
What?
Why did they have to point that out?
I don't know.
Just... 45 and balding.
Well, getting on a bit for back then.
Why is that important? Why did they have to say you were balding?
He was going through male pattern baldness. They just wanted to notice.
So if he was balding, he still had some hair. So they could have just said, dark hair, dark eyes.
Yeah.
Why did they have to fucking put him down like that?
Because call him out, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's not on.
Male pattern baldness isn't a fucking joke.
No, it sounds very upsetting.
Yeah.
Genetics indicated origins of Anatolia, which is modern-day Turkey. So, would have come from a farming background who had migrated towards the area where he was found.
Hmm.
His body showed signs of physical trauma, which included broken ribs, a broken nose, cavities, intestinal parasites, and his right hand between his thumb and forefinger was cut nearly to the bone. So poor old Otzi, the man has been through it.
Okay, so that's a defensive wound to the hand from a sword or something.
Mm.
I don't think the killers put parasites in him.
No, that's just something they discovered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell you what else they discovered. He had a predisposition for cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and obesity, although he did not suffer from any of these things.
Oh.
Yeah.
How can they tell he's got obesity if he's not obese?
No, a predisposition to it. So whatever it is in his I mean, I'm going to word it terribly because I don't fucking know. Hmm. Whatever is in his genetics, they can see.
Right, okay.
So you like a tattoo, don't you?
Yeah.
Otzi himself was fond of a bit of ink, and he had 61 tattoos.
Okay.
It's not bad.
I didn't know Turks did that back then.
His last meal or meals were dried ibex and deer meat with einkorn wheat, and his death was the result of having been shot in the back with an arrow. It entered his left shoulder, hitting an artery, causing him to bleed to death.
Right.
Now, scientists are still working to learn more about Otzi and others from around that time. They said, quote, "We hope to learn more, to get a better understanding of whether he was a typical individual of that time or maybe somehow different to others." Otzi is Europe's oldest known human mummy, and if you would like to visit Otzi, he's currently housed in the South Tyrol Museum, where he is kept in a cooling chamber. Now, Neil.
Yeah.
We're not actually done with Otzi just yet. Next week, we are not only going to come to an end of the Yorkshire Ripper, but we're also going to continue a bit further into Otzi's story.
About how he died.
Well, no, we know he died. We can't really know any more than that.
Well, you could. Like,
okay.
So you said it was death by arrow, so the arrow's still in him.
Yeah.
They'd be able to identify if that's like a Roman Empire arrow or what. Or like, if the arrow had been removed, you know, that's not going to be a Roman because they had fucking arrows coming out the arse.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't have bothered going up and pulling the arrow out.
Mm.
Whereas someone who hasn't got that many arrows is like, well, I need that back.
Yeah.
So yeah.
What do you think though? You think that's interesting, or you couldn't give a fuck?
Yes. Yeah, it's all right.
Would you ever consider going to visit Otzi?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't mind going back to Italy.
Yeah.
I like a pizza.
And we were talking about going to Austria as well.
What?
Well, more so I was talking about going to Austria. You were kind of like, I suppose if you want.
I'll just go where you're going.
Yeah.
As long as it's not France.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.